Thank you. is sad and lonely. For you I sigh, for you, dear, only. Why haven't you seen it? I'm all for you, body and soul. I spend my days in longing and wondering why it's me you're wronging. I tell you, I mean it. I'm all for you, body and soul. I can't believe it. It's hard to conceive it that you turn away romance. Are you pretending it looks like the ending? Unless I could have one more chance to prove, dear, my life
over. Okay, I'd like to apologize for me. Tardiness and call to order the Design Review Board meeting of Tuesday, May 23rd.
Roll call. Member Carroll is absent. Member Clinton. Member Shaler.
Present.
Member Sweeney.
Here.
Member Whalen.
Here.
Vice Chair Smith. And Chair Branch.
Here.
Thank you.
And now we will do the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty, justice for all. Okay, our administrative agenda. Let's start with the meeting minutes.
Motion to approve.
I'll second.
Any discussion? Seeing none, we may not be able to vote on this. I have to abstain since I wasn't here. We may need to continue that.
I'm trying to think if it's the majority vote or if we need the actual quorum, which is the quorum would be the majority of the.
We'll vote on it anyway.
I think that would be best.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
And I will abstain. And that takes us to our planning director report.
Hey, good afternoon, Chair Branch and members. The only thing I have to announce today is that we do have the State of the City event tomorrow, Wednesday, at 6:30, held at the Community Center. It's a free event. There was an event held at the Bacar a few weeks ago. So this one is for the community, and it's free, 6:30 tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
Location of that?
Community Center.
That will take us to item C, the review of agenda.
So, okay, your agenda, everything's intact today to be heard, and we are looking at canceling the June 13th meeting for lack of agenda items. So the next item would be, a next agenda meeting would be June 27th.
Okay. All righty. At this time, the public shall have an opportunity to comment on an agenda item. Not on today's agenda. Is there anybody here who would like to speak? Seeing none, we'll move to item E1.
Item E1 is on the sign review. It's the Marriott Residence Inn overall sign plan and signage, located at 6350 Hollister Avenue.
Greetings.
APN 073-050-048, case number 17039 DRB.
Mr. Chair, since we're having the items brought to full board, if we could also have declarations for sign items. I know in the past we haven't.
Okay. Has everybody visited the site?
Familiar with the site and no ex parte.
Familiar with the site, no ex parte.
Site visit, no ex parte discussions.
Just really quickly, this was last heard at the April 11th DRB meeting, where the DRB provided comments, and the applicant has responded to those comments, and I'll let them walk you through those changes, and I'm here if you have any questions.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, board members. My name is Tony Rozek, Vice President of R.D. Olson Development, the applicant. We originally presented two wall-mounted signs and two monument signs. Since the last subcommittee presentation, we revised one of our monument signs to an entrance drive sign. Which is pictured on this second rendering here. As you can see, the sign has been scaled down tremendously. We started with a monument sign that was 8 feet wide and 3.5 feet tall, and reduced it down to a simple directional sign.
Pardon me, I just want to make sure I'm clear from the beginning. So in addition to the large monument sign, there'll be another monument sign and two wall signs?
Our original submittal had two large monument signs.
Right.
Our new and revised submittal has only one monument sign at the main corner and this directional sign, directional.
Did the DRB recommend this directional sign be placed here, or is this something that's different that's coming forward just today?
Well, just kind of, I'm not sure if you have the comments. So one of the comments that was made at the last DRB hearing was to remove the additional monument sign at the driveway entrance and replace with a directional sign.
Thank you.
The wall-mounted sign locations have not been revised, and we have one wall-mounted sign oriented towards our main entrance off of Hollister Avenue, and the second wall-mounted sign is used as reference on Robin Hill Road. But we believe that traffic heading eastbound on Hollister Avenue would actually see our monument sign first and more prominently. So the second wall-mounted sign is on the west.
It's right there.
Yeah,
right?
Correct. Correct. It's on our west facade, and it's meant for reference if traffic is driving up and down Robin Hill Road. And the two wall-mounted signs, one monument and one directional, do meet the base zoning ordinance of this district. The actual materials and quality of the signs will be extruded channel signage with illuminated letters, similar in quality and style as our Marriott Courtyard Hotel just down the street.
Tony, I have a question.
Yes.
When I look at, could we flip the page? Mm-hmm. This looks like it's just the letters on the wall. But in our packet, this looks like It's a big can sign. Is this just to demark the location so it's easy to see, or is this actually something else?
Yes, correct. It'll be individual extruded letters, similar to our Marriott Courtyard Hotel, and the black and white photo just has that panel of wall rendered instead of the whole building.
Okay, so it'd be, the letters here would be like this, just individual letters on the wall.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, thank you. Sorry to interrupt your presentation. Are you?
That's
it?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Any questions from the board?
Could you please roll back the top sheet there? Very nice rendering. So the person's depicted standing, walking by that. How tall are those persons?
They are probably 5 foot four. How's that as an estimate? The sign is 4 foot six on a 7-inch base, so total 5 foot one, and the woman is slightly taller, so I'd say mid 5 feet, with the gentleman being
okay
in high 5 feet.
Thank you. And is it set on top of a berm, or is the grade a little bit higher than the sidewalk? I'm just trying to get a perspective actually from the sidewalk, how high the top of the sign is.
The grade does slope up at least a minimum of 6 inches.
Okay. So if you add all those together, it comes up to what, 5.5 feet?
Approximately, yes.
From the sidewalk
to the 5'7"
of the monument sign. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Do gents have any questions?
Just to follow up on what you just said, it's a minimum grade of 6 inches.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What's the maximum?
Oh, it'll be 6 inches. It'll be 6 inches.
Okay, because that is,
yes. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's what Member Shaler's getting
yes.
at. It's in the past.
That's fine.
It's the monument sign comes in at spec, mm-hmm. only it's put on a 3-foot pile of dirt, and they get an extra 3 feet out of us.
Thank you for that correction. And it'll be 6 inches because we cannot afford to slope it up anymore. Immediately behind the sign is a small detention basin for our state stormwater drainage. So it would have to slope back down immediately.
Yeah, so total max is 5.5 plus or minus
yes.
inch or two.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
My question tears off yours, Chair Branch. When I look at the packet, the wall panel signs do not appear to be on the wall surface, but a box that is attached to the wall with an acrylic face. That's what the proposal is, right?
No, it's individual extruded letters, and the black and white photos may be, are you talking about the wall-mounted signs?
The wall signs, yes.
Yes.
Let's take a look.
4 of 6.
Here you go, Tony. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's what I'm looking at. But I
so this...
That's a letter.
This is just a letter, not a
letter.
Box that
yes.
the whole thing is. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, I made the same interpretation mm-hmm. that you did, that it looked like a box because of the way it pushes down on the lower edge and the coloration of it, too.
Yeah.
My second question is, why were these, were at a disadvantage since the signage subcommittee first reviewed this? Apparently, they had some comments about the wall signs. What were those? Did it have anything to do with the location of these signs or their size?
So the only comment on the wall signs was actually that there wasn't a proposed wall sign on Hollister. It was actually only a proposed wall sign on Robin Hill. The DRB sign subcommittee actually asked for the second sign to actually be put on the Hollister frontage.
I see. Then another question following up. It seems like the natural place to put your identity sign would be at the Portico Share entryway. Why was, just briefly, not to belabor the point, but why not there?
That would be a viable option, yes, and we have studied that location. We prefer, or we believe that a more classy and sophisticated application would be to not have a sign immediately on center above your front door. Mm-hmm. We prefer to have them offset. We prefer to have them relate to vehicles approaching the site or driving into the property. And it was just felt that an ornamental window with its ornamental metal would just blend into a mission style in a more sophisticated manner.
Mm-hmm. I support those approaches, although when I look at the presentation, I get a different idea about the wall-mounted panel signs, that they aren't just freestanding letters. Mm-hmm. So I guess it remains to be seen what it does look like.
May I add, again, our Marriott Courtyard Hotel, which is... which was recently built approximately 2.5 years ago. It does have the same type of extruded letter signs as we're proposing here.
Okay. My question already got answered, so I guess at that point we can go to comments. You guys have comments?
I find the proposal to be just fine and acceptable.
Likewise, and I like having the wall off to the side instead of center front.
Bill?
I guess I have three comments. I appreciate your flexibility in working with the DRB. Hopefully you feel this is an improvement. I personally think it is. I appreciate your comments about talking about it being classy and sophisticated. I think this is appropriate for this project and that you've improved it in that way. And I do appreciate the monument sign, the size of it not being too large. I think it's acceptably sized, and I think it's still very effective. So thank you.
I concur with all of those comments. So how about a motion? Yeah.
I'll make a motion to approve the signage as proposed.
I'll second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thanks, Tony.
Thank you.
Okay, item E2.
Item E2 is the sign review calendar. It's 9 round signage located at 6831 Hollister, Suite 1, APN 075-100034, case number 17057, DRB.
Done.
Do you need a motion, or can we just do that?
All right. Well, let's go to item F1.
Item F1 is conceptual design review at South Coast Church Trellis, located at 5814 Cathedral Oaks Road, APN 069-090-049, case number 17-049, DRB. Okay, has everybody visited the site?
I'm familiar with the site, no ex parte.
Same.
No site visit, no ex parte discussions.
I haven't visited the site since the last time it was at DRB when you did all the other improvements, so I've not spoken to the applicant. So.
Sounds good. Thanks, Chair and members of the DRB. So today we're here for a conceptual slash design review. And so this is for South Coast Church. It's on 5814 Cathedral Oaks. Currently on the site, they have the church itself, it's roughly 10,000 square feet. They have a youth barn, 2,600 square feet. There's a parsonage on the site. And the applicant's proposing a trellis, a 1,517 square foot trellis on site, just kind of to the north of the church itself. Kind of a little background. The applicant received an entitlement for an addition on the church a couple years ago, as well as was entitled for a concrete terrace on site. So the applicant's coming forward to do a trellis over that at this time for my understanding for some events or, and et cetera. But doing some minor landscaping as well, but I'll hand it over to Greg Jenkins, the agent for the applicant here, and we'll go from there. Thanks a lot.
We on? We are on. I'm Greg Jenkins, the architect for the owners. This is Pastor Reno DiTillo, and this is Ray Posner, our contractor, actually more of an artist than a contractor. Our campus has, in the past, won 2 Goleta Beautiful Awards, and Ray has amazingly brought architectural antiquity to this property, ranging from items that are thousands of years old to several centuries old. So the quality of detail and attention to detail is impeccable in my mind. So this this terrace form that we have was previously approved, and the purpose of the terrace basically was to give some substance for our accessible path of travel from the parking lot to the church building itself. So we figured that we already have our baptistry in this location with a fountain in front of it, so people already congregated out on the patio to observe outdoor baptisms and that type of thing. So we did the terrace. And then we got to thinking, you know what, it can get pretty darn sunny and hot. So the idea of adding the trellis came to mind. We did have, in the original concept, we had a canopy over the main entrance stair, and so we've decided to propose, you know, this additional trellis form to go out past it. Ray has a sample of the color, which matches other trim on site. Ray basically takes new wood and antiques it like that. He distresses it and adds what he calls his schmaz to it. And it's just beautiful. If you've been out on the campus, you've seen the youth barn. All the trim is made from that, and it's amazing to me. So the labor of love is great. So the trellis itself, we have kind of a hierarchy of timber sizes. The supporting members are 8x12s. The main cross beams are 8x10s, and then the top trellis are 6x8. So nothing is spindly, everything is good size, and then it'll all be that particular color. So all of the hardware is going to be blind, so it's going to look like wood, and I can't wait to see what it looks like. Landscaping-wise, we did, nothing really changes at the trellis form. We did have some previous landscaping here on the previous application, some more ground cover, and we're thinking, you know, it would be nice to add some additional screening for the neighbors, especially looking down on the flat roof area of our addition. So I just threw out of the hat the idea of adding some live oaks along here. And I was talking with Ray about this before the meeting, and just a whole palette of nothing but live oaks. Number one, they're so slow growing. And Ray had some other ideas that we want to throw out there and just kind of, you know, we can change this if we need to come back on this to show that different plant material. But Ray had everything from a, what'd you have, Ray?
New Zealand Christmas tree was one of the ones I was thinking about that would be a, you know, it's a beautiful branching out style of tree that's evergreen, has a very dark leaf. It's pretty, it gets full, requires very little water. Once it's established, it's you don't ever water it. Another one was Catalina cherry, which I've used quite a bit on the coast. Great plant, same thing, requires very little water, works very well with the conditions of our air quality and so forth, and would bush out. So I was thinking we could maybe mix those in a little bit together along with the live oak and jacaranda. I think it would look really amazing. And would it fulfill the concept of screening. Mm-hmm. They're also they're pretty fast growing. They might get to between 15 to 25 feet. You can prune them to stay at almost any height you want them to be, but if you want to get it up a little bit, which I think we'd want to do because of the houses being much higher than our property, but I think that would be a great, great possibility, trees in there.
So I am done with my presentation and happy to answer any questions you might have.
Great. Any questions from the board?
Yeah, the plan shows a set of stairs. Could you talk a little bit about the topography? I'm at a disadvantage since I have not visited the site. And I see a potential conflict between a path of travel and a flight of stairs.
Sure. Our total grade changes about 3 feet. So each riser is 6 inches. So we're coming up, you know, each step here is up 18 inches and then another 18 inches. And so this is a total of 3 feet here. So my path of travel, so this is a landing coming from the handicap parking spaces, zooming out here on the site plan. So our pedestrian or able-bodied path of travel is straight down these stairs for, you know, mobility challenged people. This walkway, it's really not a ramp, so we don't need rails, we don't need curbs. It is slight enough in its slope that it is just
1 to 20 or less.
Yeah, it's a sloping walkway, so we don't get that visual interruption either. So does that answer your question, sir?
Partially. So what is new concrete in the plan? I know through it, there's a series of retaining walls and looks like seat walls.
Yeah, well, this was previously approved. It has not been constructed yet. So, and these patios were previously approved and not constructed yet. We had some existing patio that were ripped out for the purpose of the construction, introducing utility lines and everything for the youth barn that's under construction as well. So the basic footprint of the parking lot exists, and the basic footprint of that patio previously existed as well. So we're replacing the patio with pervious pavers instead of a solid concrete previously. So that was one of the requirements that your board asked of us last time.
So underneath the trellis is a series of concrete risers.
Yeah, and we were contemplating, and I don't know if we, yes, to answer your question, yes. So these are concrete decks and you know, risers as well. So this location is an 18-inch step, you know, so someone could actually sit. It's, you know, seat height on this location. Or we could have, you know, a couple of rows of chairs up here, if, you know, if we needed to for that focal point of what's happening in the patio.
Okay. Yeah. Any questions from you?
No.
Bill, do you have any questions?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I do. I just this is actually a question for staff because I recall this project coming before us and portions of it apparently have been built, and just wondering how long a permit is still valid for it expires before the project goes forward.
Unless they break ground early.
Okay, and because they did the youth portion of it, does that mean the rest of it is actually considered broken ground?
And you get 6 month extension, you know, yeah, between every inspection, you know. So I mean, it can go on for much longer than 2 years.
Okay. And the questions I had, kind of just a series of checklists here, on the drainage for this additional concrete area, you've got a plan to move that to maybe a useful portion of landscaping or something like that?
The drainage is not affected by this application. So all of the drainage and grading was addressed in the previously approved permit issued set of drawings. So I focused with this set just with the trellis, just the aesthetic of the trellis is what we're adding.
And lighting, do you have any particular lighting that you're looking to install underneath? And will that be downward focused, so-called dark sky usage?
Great question. Yes, it will. We did previously in our electrical plan under this canopy, we had downlights in that location. We have not discussed as an applicant whether we would propose them in here, but if we did, they would all be downlight, night sensitive, very much so. All of the light fixtures that were approved were night sensitive.
And amplified sound, will you have speakers installed that will be?
There won't be speakers installed. When a baptism is going on, we usually have a speaker and a microphone. That's been something typically that has been done. And when you're in the water, you don't want to touch that microphone. it's not part of our application, and we're not installing anything permanent in the structure from that standpoint. But that's what typically goes on, unless he can shout really loud.
Okay. Wind screening. Will there ever be a need to have things wind screening installed above the trellis or in any directions or areas to?
No.
And maybe I missed it, but you talked about additional landscaping, but we're looking at ever having any vines on those trellises? Or those just
I asked the pastor and Ray that, and that's not their intent to grow anything on it. So therefore, it's not part of our application.
And is there a canopy in addition to the trellis that's already out there or is being proposed as well? You mentioned a canopy at one point in your...
This portion here was what I refer to as a canopy. So that was drawn on the original site plan just as kind of an arbor. Rather than a canopy, let's call it an arbor. It's really, it's kind of an entrance arbor that we had just going over the stairs. So that portion remained, and we just kind of exploited it a bit going out.
Okay, yeah. I was just trying to understand the relationship between that and what's being proposed here. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can, is that the end of the questions?
Not unless you have more.
That's it.
All right.
Maybe it's your turn.
I have no questions. It's pretty straightforward, I think. So do you have any comments you'd like to add?
Sure. I guess I would just say that... I'm not a landscape professional. We don't have our landscape professionals here to comment or critique your plan. So just regarding the live oaks, I realize those do take time, but I guess it's reasonable to assume that your church will be here for a long time. So that might be nice as kind of part of the legacy that somebody will appreciate further on down the line, in addition to whatever else is appropriate on along the, I guess it's the western boundary there. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good idea.
Okay. And we have some in there. We actually plan on having those intermixed in there.
Yeah.
So they're actually in the first plan and they're defined in there. So we think that too. It's just we have the consideration of the residents behind. It'd be nice to get a little bit quicker canopy in there. So mixing it up, I think, will create that.
Okay. Aaron, do you have any comments?
No comments, no.
I think the trellis design is quite handsome, and it will do well to form this space around your baptismal font. I understand, Daryl, this is a conceptual approval. So while I have no problems with the built environment, I do have some reservations about a very carefully thought out landscape plan. I personally don't like to see oak trees lined up like soldiers, but that's a personal thing. And one can always buy larger trees if that's what you're looking for. But so there
is. Just to clarify,
yes, please.
As you mentioned, this is actually a request for conceptual / design review. So, with these minor land use permits for trellises and such, the board does have the option to either approve it conceptually or approve it all the way to design review, depending on what the board thinks. But they do have that option if they want to go all the way to design review. really up to the board in this case.
So what was furnished to us was really just the trellis, the landscape. It was just introduced at the meeting. Is that, do other members have that?
No, I think it was introduced. But the discussion of going
hiding back
with,
there on
with
the
alternative,
last page, all right.
Going with additional species in there as well as a live oak. I mean, I'm thinking right. It'd be fun to kind of add a mix in there instead of just a single palette.
Well, I really didn't give it any thought as far as the landscape, and those are where my reservations are. But owing that you'll be returning with a landscape plan for approval.
Well, if this suffices, and if we agree that a healthy mix of plant type in the palette that we mentioned is acceptable,
what if we?
Okay. I'm at fault then.
What if we? I guess it's a staff question. Can we go to design approval with a caveat that perhaps their proposed landscaping gets a look over by Aaron?
Yeah, that was going to be my suggestion because this project was noticed with some minor landscaping features, and since we don't have our landscape professionals, I think it would be fair to have a conformance review with staff and then bring in a landscape architect.
Because I think, I mean, it's my opinion that it's complete and successful enough to warrant design approval, but I think it would be nice to have Aaron Carroll take a look at the landscaping. If the rest of the board feels similarly.
Indeed.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, just clarification. That's the same as or similar to consent calendar, right? So it's just one, it's a small.
It's not even.
Oh, okay. Not even no, all right. Okay.
No, see what happens is.
I see.
It's, okay. You'll just deal with staff.
Perfect.
Okay. Right? And then they'll email to Aaron directly. So.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Someone want to do a motion to that extent?
I'll motion to approve as proposed with the caveat that any of the landscape professionals designated by chair sign off at staff review.
Okay. Can I get a second?
Second.
All right. And under discussion, I'd like to just clarify that that would be Aaron Carroll who gets to review that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thanks, Greg.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Do we have our applicant back for?
We're going to hear that item after this one.
Why do you get to say?
Because they're not here.
Oh.
Well, who's the person at the end? The person.
There's only one gavel.
There.
Okay. Has everybody visited the site?
We need to read the item into record.
Yeah, I know.
This is a conceptual approval. It is review. It is the Verizon Streetlight antenna. It's located at Brandon Drive, ROW, adjacent to 7620 Cathedral Oaks Road. APN adjacent to APN 079-560-004, case number 15-095-DRB.
Okay, now, has everybody visited the site?
Site visit, no expertise.
I did not visit the site, but I'm familiar with it, and I actually street viewed it online today as well, and I've had no conversations with the applicant.
Yeah, no site visit, but familiar with the site, very much so, and no ex parte.
The same as the chair. I have not visited the site. I have examined it online with views and no outside discussions.
Brian?
All right. Thank you, Chair. So you might recall the board last saw this item back in February of 2016. And back then, its location was on a streetlight. The proposed location was on a streetlight on Cathedral Oaks near the corner of Brandon Drive. After it received some comments from the board, it went on to Planning Commission, and they had various comments throughout their meeting, but they continued it with a request to the applicant that they consider other locations. So since then, the applicant has been considering that and has come back with the location that you see before you. So now it's at the northern kind of terminus of Brandon Drive at the end of the cul-de-sac, right near the northernmost boundary of the city, about 200 feet north of Cathedral Oaks Road. It's located in the parkway, so that's between the curb and the sidewalk. And so both the streetlight and the ground-mounted equipment would be located in the parkway. You might recall the other location on Cathedral Oaks Road, there was not a parkway, so you know, there was some discussion about where you put the ground-mounted equipment and things. This one is a little, there's less to deal with in that regard because it's in the parkway. I wanted to note, though, that there is some landscaping in the parkway that I've been told is currently being maintained generally by the HOA of the neighboring apartments and condos there, just for what it's worth in your review. So the current proposal is to remove the existing SCE streetlight and install a new one with a similar spec for the light, but this time with a antenna on top. The antenna would be within a shroud painted to match the pole. The maximum height of the streetlight with the antenna would be 32 feet 10 inches. And again, the associated equipment, cabinet, power pedestal, utility connection, et cetera, would be ground mounted. For context, as I mentioned, the project previously had gone in front of the Planning Commission for review. This type of installation triggers a conditional use permit, so that's why it had gone previously. So, again, after we receive comments here from the board, we'll go back to the Planning Commission for approval on that CUP. The general plan policy that I wanted the board to make specific comment on is in your staff report. It's VH 2.3, and it talks about certain things, certain methods that could be used to screen a utility of this nature. So wanted the board to consider this project in light of that policy that we have. And this is similar to what we did last time, so it's just a slightly different location. And one thing to note, I also make note on here that the previous location had been directly adjacent to a scenic corridor on Cathedral Oaks. That's no longer the case, being 200 feet to the north. However, it's still visible from that corridor, so it's not right on the corridor, but near it now, in case that makes a difference for your review. And that was everything that I had. So I have Ben Hextedy. Sorry.
Another one.
here with the applicant and can make a presentation. I'm also here for questions.
All right, thank you. Floor is yours.
So, as Brian said, we were previously located on Cathedral Oaks, and which was a scenic corridor. The equipment, if you don't remember, was going to be offset into kind of the Ivy planter area. It was right at the edge, I believe, of the city's right-of-way. I don't think it was ever determined completely, the right-of-way and then the property line, but it was definitely at the edge of their right-of-way. There were some issues from the board, from you guys, in regards to the massing of it, especially right there, because it was right next to the sidewalk. And if
you've screened it, then it rose it up, and it was more elevated. I think they presented some different options, and there were some different discussions. Ultimately, once it went to Planning Commission, the community really wanted to see it not on Cathedral Oaks, not in front of the houses. This was an issue. That's why my RF engineer from Verizon is here, Dwayne Bonham. It took a lot of time figuring out, is it still a viable site if we move it up here? The thinking a lot of time with, I think, with wireless facilities is, oh, just get higher and it gets better. Well, this isn't that kind of facility. This is a capacity site that is offloading sites that are, I believe, to the west and to the east of it. It's not intended to, you know, be this big macro site that covers this broad area. It is to be a centralized site that is almost lower than you would, well, you can probably speak to it better.
Can I get you to speak into your mic? And
so these are smaller sites. It's very important they put out very low power. It's very important that they be close to where the users are. They maximum distance is about a quarter mile on them. And so we don't have the opportunity to move these great distances. We can move them a couple hundred feet this way or that way, but really not much more than that without coming through with a whole, you know, a redesign or, you know, going two instead of one to try to cover it. So the objective here is try to cover some of the housing up here that is both not well covered and is taking up a great deal of capacity on the adjacent sites because of its distance from the adjacent sites. And that's pretty much it. We don't want to be too high, but once again, we can't be too low. Moving behind the apartment buildings there, or condos, I'm not sure which they are, I apologize. If we get too low, they start creating shadows. Radio works just like light. If you put a light behind a shed, it doesn't illuminate what's on the other side of the shed. So we would not be able to cover the other side. If we're too low, we won't cover the other side of the apartment buildings, and really limits the ability of this site, and we have to start stacking more of them in.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons you'll notice there's two remote radio units, the RRUs, attached up by the antenna. You always want to have these as close to the antenna as you possibly can have them. The site functions much better. The further you get away, the more the site doesn't function at its highest capability. Because we had to move it back and because of the new location, for it to function properly, we had to put the RRUs, two of the RRUs up there, so that it could achieve its objectives. If this site doesn't achieve its objectives, then you end up needing one here and needing one here, and it defeats the purpose of what the site's trying to do. If you get it in the right location, then you don't need multiple. You only need the one to take care of the situation that they're trying to take care of. And so that's what we're trying to do. And that's why it changed a little. Plus, it's a taller pole. SCE has a couple different prefabricated, but they're a certain height. They have a 23-foot. They have this model. I believe they have one even taller, but I haven't even seen it. So we basically had to go with this one or that one. We went with this one. For some reason, they put the light at a slightly different height and angle on the taller pole, so we had to extend the antenna just slightly. I believe it was 6 inches, so that we weren't bouncing off that, and then the radio frequency wouldn't work. So that's why you'll see some of the design changes. The cabinet is the same as the final proposed cabinet, I believe, that went in front of you last time. Obviously, the meter pedestal is by SCE. It's placed, they like to have their 3 feet separation so that they can get around it, so they can see it. It's more an SCE thing where the meter is being placed, not so much ours. And the cabinet is placed 3 feet from the pole because that is a requirement for GEO-95 utility regulations, which basically, if somebody was working on this pole or near this pole and they fell off, they don't want them to fall in a cabinet. So they're placed 3 feet minimum clearance. Sometimes it's 6 feet, depending on the height and what it is and what kind of pole it is. Other than that, we didn't so much propose any landscaping. I did do some of my own little renderings because I did go out there and notice that in this photo you don't see it, but there is some large agave there. And I believe on the plans it was even noted to remove. But remove and replace would probably be more along the lines of what we would do. Try to locate the existing agave around the equipment. As it matures and gets larger, it can screen the equipment to quite a degree. And then the equipment cabinets were painted more to match the surroundings. but they can be a different color as well. As you know, if you go to this location, what's going to basically shield the cabinets the most is probably the cars that are parked there. Every time I've driven by, there's generally cars there. The light will still illuminate over the entire area. I believe it's the city wants us to go with the LED light, which in this case is probably a really good case because it is kind of out there where people are getting in and out of their cars and, you know, where people could kind of be. So it's it'll illuminate that area still and function as the light it was intended to be.
Okay.
With that, I have nothing further to add and answer your questions.
Do you happen to have another visual sim that shows the cabinets from a different angle?
Yeah,
right,
yeah,
now
yeah.
They're kind of blocked by the pole, so it really doesn't give a true notion of what it looks like. Straight on. Thank
yeah.
you.
So, and I'll just, I did that really.
And that includes the SCE and?
That is the meter, the smaller one with the bollard in front of it, and then the Verizon cabinet.
And if those were to be undergrounded, the response were that there would be so much venting required, it would look virtually the same?
Well, the meter pedestal would not change. That's always number one. SCE will not place their meters underground unless it's their own personal vault. The meter pedestal would remain and be the same. The stacks would be approximately, I believe, 17, about 16 feet apart. And the stacks for this kind of site, once you get underground, in order to keep the integrity of the equipment and for the site, Verizon has to have a controlled vault. So the stacks need to be pretty tall so it's not loud, because it will be very loud when you vault this kind of equipment. And so the stacks, the taller the stack, the quieter it gets. That being said, it won't be silent. As it's proposed now, it is quiet equipment and it is air-cooled. So the whole design of these, I mean, obviously we understand vaulting and it is, they make the cabinet as small as they can to make it a good site, a reliable site that functions. Once you start vaulting this, now it's going to be a 17 by 7 foot by 16 foot deep excavation in order to have the right equipment in there for it to be a reliable site for emergencies, for flooding, for all those issues. There might be some other carriers out there who do smaller vaults, but if there's a flood, their vault is gone. There is no online, and that's just not acceptable to Verizon, and for good reason. They're one of the major emergency lines that most of the public services use, and so they need to keep on air. Also, just the fact that the majority of people, now over 50% of people, only have cell phones in their home. They don't even have landlines. It's important that these. So once you start taking this cabinet, there might be other ways to kind of guard it, and then you bury it underground. It's creating a much larger project and a much, in our opinion, impact to the area. Plus, you can't run utilities anywhere near there now. You can't go under. You can't go over the top. And you're shutting down this area for probably a good month while you're excavating it. And why you're doing it. So that is why we propose them with the above ground cabinets. And then we try to work with boards such as yourself to come up with the best solution.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I've got a couple of speaker slips here. The first one is Sandy Kovanda. Did I say that correctly?
Hello, it's on?
Yep.
Okay. My name is Sandy Kovanda, and I live at 7580 Cathedral Oaks number 1, and I was here in opposition of the ones right in front of my home. And so I was looking at the February 29th, 2016, and I was looking at the things that I had said before that still apply. And so I was concerned about the RF exposure, and I'm glad that you guys re-looked at that. it looked like the old calculation said it was going to be 11%, and this one says more like 2% if you're in the second-story building. I'm pointing at James because he lives there. Anyways, before we were concerned that the equipment was going to be on our private property. Also, we're concerned about lowering property values. It's in the city, it says that you can't have a site that's 2 miles, that's visually, if you can see it within 2 miles. And I found there's a cell site at Dos Pueblos. And so that's less than a mile away from us. So I don't know why we would need another site within 2 miles. I'm concerned about light pollution, which affects residents, wildlife, and migrating birds like swallows. There's a lot of wildlife. I've seen a mountain lion, I've seen coyotes, I've seen lots of birds, deer. And so they're all on that hill right there. I'm concerned about graffiti. And also in the city, it says that the wireless facilities adjacent to residents is discouraged. And then when I was reading about the new one, I have to say, this location I'm happier with than on Cathedral Oaks. Okay, this is a better choice. But I was reading where it was talking about the underground equipment, and I don't want noise. So I don't know. I mean, if you put it above ground, you know, I guess what I'm concerned about is, would a wild animal or a predator hide behind these equipment when you get out of your car at night? But there's going to be light, so that's better. But it's just, you know, those are the things I am concerned about. But I don't want to get hurt by the radiation. I don't want our property values to go down. And James is here to talk about, like, an email that he sent. He's my neighbor in number 10, and there's people that are upset about this. I talked to the apartments that are across the street, and they don't want their people to be upset about living next to a cell site. So I don't know. When it goes to the city, who knows who will show up, but I'm surprised nobody else is here right now. So anyways, but that's what my comments are, and I don't know. Of course, we want cell sites. We want to be able to use our cell phones, but I don't want us to be hurt by it. And I don't know why it has to be so close to the one at Dos Pueblos High School. You know, I don't understand that. Okay.
All right.
So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next speaker is James Diaz.
Hi, everyone. I live at Cathedral Oaks 7580, number 10. So I'm one of the units that's closest in proximity to the proposed site. And I'm also on the second floor. And I can actually see the existing street lamp there from all three of my bedrooms. To be perfectly honest, the main concern that I have is property values. All of the studies that I've come across, and I've used very objective language when doing my queries online on Google Scholar, but all of the studies I've come across have shown that these types of facilities negatively impact property values within close proximity. The most recent study that I cited in the petition that I sent out was from February. And on average, properties within half a mile of these facilities lost over 2% of their property value, and the homes closest to them lost as much as 10%. There's also mixed evidence about the, you know, health effects, but I know a lot of my neighbors are concerned about that as well. And, you know, no one really wants to take chances with their families on issues like that. I did mention in the email that I sent to Brian yesterday that I just purchased this condo in December of 2016, and I did read through all of the minutes from past HOA meetings before making that decision. And I thought that this was a done issue, like it was no longer a problem of having these sale sites in front of or nearby that building. And that did affect my decision to purchase the condo. Coincidentally, I passed on another condo in a different location where a realtor told me and my wife of some nearby electrical equipment that wasn't even visible from the condo that we were looking at. You know, regardless of, you know, whether or not there is a health impact, it does shrink the pool of available buyers for the properties, and that's a big concern. And it does, you know, have a pretty large radius, you know, half a mile or more. It can be, you know, I'm not talking about the signal. I'm talking about the property value impact within proximity to the cell site. So it can have an impact of, you know, tens of millions of dollars for the local economy just on lost property value for being close to these cell sites. So those are the concerns that I have, particularly being one of the people that's going to be most impacted based on the studies that I've read, since I'm going to be one of the closest. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before we go to questions and stuff for the applicant, I'd just like to point out to the public that, you know, it's great that you come to public meetings and participate, and we're an aesthetic board. So whether or not this should be where they're proposing is not our purview. Our purview is to make sure that what goes there, we do the best job we can to make it look right within the neighborhood context, landscaping, colors, stuff like that. When this goes back to Planning Commission, that's where your voice would be better heard, probably, or more effective, for lack of a better term. Just so you know. Okay, so do you have any questions?
Yeah, I do. Thank you, Chair. And I appreciate your comments about this does need to return to the Planning Commission, and hopefully they'll have full and robust minutes from our meeting. If not, hopefully you're capturing these as well, because this is actually considered concept review, so we are allowed to take a swing at pretty much any of the pitches that come before this project, at least from a concept review point of view. I have a question for staff. Goleta's considering purchasing the utility poles from Southern California Edison. How does this change such a request to use poles in this fashion?
To my knowledge, that process is still ongoing. I don't know that the city has purchased any as of yet. I did talk with Cindy Moore, who's our sustainability coordinator, who's helping running that effort. She did mention that I think that Edison would not be selling us poles, light poles that have antennas or other utilities on them. So many poles in the city have existing antennas for not just cell sites, but like other utility companies use it for meter reading and things like that. As far as I know, those poles would not be sold to the city. That's my understanding. So, but nothing has been finalized yet. So we're continuing to move forward as, you know.
So if this pole were to have a Verizon cell site placed on it, it would be outside of the scope of the city's interest or ability
to purchase and maintain. That's my understanding, yes.
Okay. And the city has a co-location policy on cell sites, and nothing in the report showed the proximity of other cell sites to this one in terms of potentially co-location. It's a policy, though yet I've seen yet to really see it be enacted here, so it's kind of like words on paper that aren't being utilized to any extent. If you might comment on that.
Sure, yeah, that's the co-location is always a tough one because, you know, the needs are so specific to one area, especially with an antenna like this. I think the co-location was probably intended for larger sites, you know, more sites that would be a primary for an entire area, less so on a secondary site like this that's got filling a gap, so to speak. As to the analysis in the staff report, remember this is a just design, so anything that I put in this staff report related to design, that would be, the co-location would be covered in more depth in the Planning Commission
sure.
staff report.
I understand that.
Yeah, once the complete analysis has been done. I mean, you know, I haven't completed everything
that
I need to do.
Yeah, this is just the beginning.
Right.
It's concept review.
Right.
And am I right in understanding that this new pole would be 6.5 feet taller than the current light standard that's at the end of the cul-de-sac? As I looked at the pictures, it looked like the two were...
I'll answer that one.
One was 26 and one was 32.
I forgot what it was. I don't believe it was.
It's definitely taller, but it was... Yes, I was just making sure.
Yeah,
the right one.
So, 26
to a now 32, so 6 feet 10 to the top of the pole. The light fixture itself is a little less than 2 feet higher. To top of antenna is 6 feet 10 inches.
Right. Okay. That's what I was saying. So that's kind of a significant visual difference, in addition to the equipment that's being placed on top there and the bulk of that. For the applicant, do you know how many residents, we were given the kind of the scope of service area that this will improve. How many in this area actually are Verizon users? What percent of the people living that are affected by this territory will actually benefit from this service? Improved service.
To be honest, we don't have that granularity of information. It just not something we have. I know that in this market, I've seen it's the percentage of overall customer base in Santa Barbara that is Verizon is extremely high. 50% of wireless customers are on Verizon's networks. It's one of the reasons we're building. You're seeing us build lots of sites. But we do not get data that shows us, because of privacy protection,
in the aggregate.
Proprietary data. There are some calculations I can run that uses some assumptions, but it's not specific. It will say, based on census data, here's how many people would cover, and then you can apply the number of 50% to that. I can run those numbers. But once again, it's not a true saying that this is going to help 636 customers. Mm-hmm.
I guess the point that I'm mostly trying to get to is how many in this area use or don't use this service. So how many people in this area will or will not benefit from this, and how many people will be affected visually by this new visual obstruction?
Bill, if I might, be able to dovetail on that. If we put the necessity case up there, at least visually, there's a figure in there showing where the existing usage is that might give you at least visually kind of some areas where their goal of improving coverage.
I'll let Dwayne speak to this, but before he does, real quick, I did want to say it. That's one way to look at it, is who lives there. Okay, it's only for them, but it's not, because for one thing, this site is to offload the two other sites that are big sites that also feed the highway, that feed the roads, that feed all the tourists, that feed the people. So it's not so much just, okay, there's 300 people here and these 300 people are going to benefit. Everybody who drives down that road is going to, if all of a sudden there's an event somewhere nearby where there's a big amount of people with Verizon, you're going to see diminished results if you don't have these kind of facilities to bolster those kind of things. So just kind of to give that kind of perspective.
So maybe looking further down the road, are we to expect a proliferation of sites as more and more people are using this kind of service and expect more data? I mean, in terms of long-term planning, it's something we sort of need to be thinking about. If collocation isn't happening and the technology doesn't seem to be improving, we're simply having to deploy more and more of this technology out into even residential areas now. Is that a valid statement?
It's a valid statement, absolutely. The more people are using, electricity, the more poles had to go up, the more, same thing. It is something that happens. That is one of the reasons why a lot of jurisdictions such as Goleta put in things like, we want you to locate on a utility pole. We want you to locate on the light pole. We don't build structures that aren't already existing, or if in this case we're replacing the pole, but there was a pole already existing there. There's things that they have done and to kind of control that and to make it sure that we can at least kind of say, okay, if you're going in the right of way, this is how you need to do it. This is how it needs to be done. But to say as more and more people use their cell phone, and for that matter, more and more people use their phone as almost their computer in their house. So when there is that argument, you make the argument, that tower's in front of my house and my resale went down. Well, I'm a realtor myself. There's people that won't even go to certain areas because they can't get service in there. 50% of, or 87% of millennials only have a cell phone. And when you're selling a house, that's the first thing they ask is, how good's my service? I work from my home. I don't like to use, you know, I do all my phone and everything on my phone, and then, you know, they get the Wi-Fi or whatnot. So it's changing times.
And I think just to finish that off that comment, I think the difference here, though, the key difference that you should understand, I think, is that, or at least my understanding is that they place these locations where there's a deficiency. So unlike the analogy using electricity poles, these go into places where there's a specific deficiency. So I don't know if you want to explain the maps that we're looking at here, because I think that kind of gets into what Member Sheeler is really asking is, you know, this map is showing a deficiency of coverage in data, access to data. This is what this small site will provide for that particular area that had a deficiency.
Okay. All right. So this is what we call a coverage map. It shows levels of coverage. We simplify this down to what is high probability of good in-building service, which is what we designed to now. That's where people use their phones. It used to be many years ago when I was young, people used them in their cars. That's no longer the case. So we need to make the maps green. There's three levels of service, what we call good in building, green, good in vehicle, yellow, and red is probably good if you're standing outside. As you can see, the area that we're targeting here is shown in yellow on this map here and is circled. That is an area where we've got a large block that, thank you, that is does not have sufficient service for the 4G voice. So 3G was the voice that we're pretty used to. And over the last year to 2 years, we've gone to 4G voice, which is a digital voice. It requires stronger signals in order to work reliably. 5G, when that comes around, is going to require even stronger signals for it to work sufficiently. So what we're designing to right now is the 4G voice standard. And we're trying to find these areas that have insufficient in-building to support indoor use. And we've been pressured to do this by many of the emergency services in Santa Barbara County, because they've got concerns with it, from a ability when people get rid of their landlines to be able to dial 911, to when their firefighters go into a building for them to have all their tools, which some of their tools actually use our 4G network. So by placing this here, we move from this block of yellow that you see right here, it's circled. We fill a great deal of that in with this site. I believe with the previous, where we were in front of the building, we got pretty almost all of the yellow, but when we moved it back, we did lose a little bit, and that did open up some down on the far ends of the hole. But we see a very good improvement in the overall signal quality in that area. So that's one of our objectives. Now, second map. And this goes to the heart of what we're trying to do. There's two things. We're trying to accomplish two objectives here. One is the cell site that we have here. This is what's called a best server map. Each one of the sectors of a cell site, each one of the antennas, is shown in a different color. This shows us what cell site serves a particular area. As you can see here, the area that we're targeting is served in red, and that is by Santa Barbara Airport site, I believe. I'm going to double check my notes. Oh, I don't see it there.
I believe it's the one at Bokhara. Isn't there one at Bokhara?
I think it's Bokhara.
I think it is.
Oh, it is Bokhara. Yeah, you're right. I do so many of these that sometimes they cross up in my head. So this is served by the Bokhara Resort site. Bokhara has begun overloading, and we need to offload traffic. The best traffic that we can offload is the farthest traffic away. Okay? That does two things. One, that consumes the most power. It's way harder for me to talk from here to somebody standing at the door than it is for me to talk to you guys here. Say, so proximity is important. The less power, the more efficient it is, the more data you can put across it, the more efficient everything becomes. Secondly, it serves the purpose of extending battery life, and these units transmit at less power. Okay. Now, speaking to some of the EME concerns, this is one of the advantages. Most of the studies on EME are done at this level. The reason being, while cell site puts out much more power, proximity is more important than power when it comes to radio frequency. Holding this next to your head is worse than having a cell site 100 feet away. Okay? So, what's going to happen is as you get closer to the antennas or a small site like this, it takes the power. These only transmit as much power as they need to reach back to the site. So they can reach the site easier. They power down how much power they're transmitting. And they're working in a much more efficient mode. They can go to higher efficiency types of data communication, and they can transmit that data much faster, so they're transmitting for shorter periods of time. That's part of the reason. So by putting in the site, we take this area that's currently served by the overloaded site in red. We take that. This is what the new site will cover. And those users will be in a much better signal environment. So it will be much more efficient for both their mobiles and for our cell site. Does that help?
Thank you, Hal.
Okay. Do you have any questions?
I think you answered the questions I was going to follow up on behalf of the public. And, yeah, just radio propagation, the power drops with the square of the distance, right, if I'm remembering right?
Correct.
So, yeah, having your phone in your pocket is more dangerous than being 40 feet from the cell tower itself.
Yes.
Usually. And just one point. James brought up the a study from the Journal of Real Estate Finance and Economics might, as he mentioned, reduce property values. And while that's not exactly the purview, I read the abstract to mean a full-fledged standalone cell tower that we're seeing increasingly with made to look like a fir tree, et cetera, and the city's policy of going to utility poles only and things like that is already mitigating the problem that the study dealt with, that a standalone cell tower. So that's my reading of it as a layman anyway.
Dennis, do you have any questions? Do you have any comments? Yeah.
When this first came up, February last year, I think it was, the going underground was something I thought of, but all the points you made about venting and it's just duh, you know, I didn't think of it at the time. Shame on me that you got to deal with the heat and you got to deal with flooding and all that other stuff. So it seems like giving up the noise is probably a better trade-off than giving up one box.
Comments, Bill?
Thank you, Chair. I was going to say this site, not only to the residents of the Evergreen Terrace, but it's visible to everybody who's driving up Brandon Road to get onto Cathedral Oak. So this is going to be something that will stand out more than the current light pole currently stands out. Your comment about electricity and electrical poles, everybody benefits from having illumination, but not everybody benefits from having better Verizon service. So my question, I guess, rhetorically of sorts, is what are all the residents getting, particularly the people who live in Evergreen Terrace, in return for this visual obstruction? You know, as I was reading the responses, you're basically able to, and maybe legitimately so, deflect all other alternatives that were being proposed. So it looks, at first blush and at second blush, like Verizon is taking the path of least resistance and categorically ruling out any options and alternatives that would increase your project cost. At a minimum, as a trade-off to the people who live in Evergreen Terrace. I'd appreciate some level, higher level of screening and landscaping as much as Edison will permit you to do. This is a better site than was originally proposed.
Yeah, and as far as the landscaping, when I reviewed the two projects were so different that I didn't really know what to necessarily come in here with. Some of the pictures, some of the aerials that I looked from Google Earth, it looks one way. When I drove there, it looks a different way. Our photo sims look a different way than what it was. It was just dry. So this being conceptual, I thought we could get the most information as far as, you know, kind of how we can mitigate it as much as possible. I know screening it with a fence or something just kind of creates a lot of bulk, and my other concern is, which was a concern she brought up, now you've created a place where you literally can go live and hide
right
every night. So that's why no screening was necessarily proposed here. The cabinets do open to the sidewalk, and that we did that on purpose for two reasons. You don't want some guy parking a car to run over the technician who's there, but also it allows for putting possibly some plants in front of there. And that would be something we'd have to look with our landscape architect to make sure, okay, are we meeting all the utility guidelines that we have to? Can we put plants here and here and here? And so it would be more, if you guys talked about, like, with a lot of these sites, we've seen a lot of, in public right-of-ways, Public Works likes, if they're going to let you plant there, native, indigenous, drought-tolerant, can we not put sprinklers? Can we not? And like they said, it sounds like the community, a lot of time we run into this too, where the communities kind of just start, I'm going to put some flowers over here. I'm going to start. And they kind of start taking care of it, and Public Works just kind of looks the other way and lets it go because they're not tearing up the infrastructure, and they're not creating something that if they did need to tear it up and put lines in there, they're not tearing out sprinklers and stuff like that.
Right.
So that's absolutely something we've done with Santa Barbara County numerous times, and that's pretty much the direction Santa Barbara County has sent us is we just want to see some plants in there. But we like drought-tolerant, resistant plants.
Well, that was basically my comment, is that, you know, we have an ordinance in the city that wants these things screened. You know, with landscaping where possible, and there's nothing around that. So I think to the extent, I mean, it looks like, I don't know if that's,
So I did this yesterday after I saw the agave. So the agave looks a little bit more like that. There's some that looks like this. I am not a Photoshop expert,
right?
But I tried to just kind of give you an idea, putting in some agave, and that the ones that are there are actually larger than this, and then just kind of possibly, you know, some agave in front, agave there. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So you're saying about the agaves there?
Yeah, so that's not really there. So I just put those in the photo snip to kind of give an idea of the reason the ones so far off, there's a pole box, and then, like I said, Edison wants their 3-foot separation.
Right.
So that's why that one's kind of there. But if you're – so from a front angle, we may be able to get a plant in between that bollard or next to that bollard. It's just I need to get with – SCE and see exactly what they're going
to
allow.
I understand. I guess my comment would be to study, you know, putting landscape around that. I mean, you know, like I said, we're an aesthetic board, so the only thing we can do at this point is try to make that look better. And right now there's nothing around it, so, you know, having some landscaping around that would be advantageous, I think.
Chair Branch, I have a photo on my phone that might show up on the screen. I'd like to give it a shot. It would show the agaves that are there.
Okay.
No scrolling to other photos, okay?
Yeah. And so those are exactly basically where the equipment is going. So those could be removed and replaced, and then you wouldn't be getting rid of those plants as well.
Yeah.
So that is absolutely our thought, to do something like that. I wanted to present it to you guys as far as the sustainable drought tolerant and going that route.
Absolutely. It should be drought tolerant.
One thing that's hard to see on that photo is there is some, I don't know what kind of ground cover to the left of the agave. It's some sort of flowery ground cover that It's like light green in color.
But there's like this over here. Oh. I think he's talking about these over there.
Yeah, okay.
And it's same thing, succulents.
Yeah.
More of the flower.
Oh, this. Yeah, exactly.
And that's what I was more thinking maybe in front of the cabinet, because you got limited parkway space between the bollards and the cabinet.
Right.
That's something thinner, and then more of the agave on the sides. Because as you know, those agave get pretty large.
Point being that I think we would want to see landscaping.
Okay.
You know, as to the extent feasible, to help shield that, I think that would be good. So, from a status standpoint,
process-wise, yeah. You've given the applicant comments. They're going to be going to Planning Commission and coming back to you with hopefully to address your comments and anything else from the Planning Commission.
Okay. Okay. So we don't need a motion at this point on this because this is just a continuation. Okay. Got it. Got it.
Can I ask one question? The proposed cabinet color, is that agreeable? The green, sometimes it's great when there's something green, but the majority of the time in this area, I mean, I know last year it was nice, it was green longer than I've ever seen, but the majority of the time it's brown. That's why we went with the brown cabinet.
The comment I would have on that, I've seen cabinets, I've seen them green, I've seen them dark brown, and I've seen them tan. And you know, depending on what happens down the line here, what gets built back here, would affect what that wants to be. And we don't know when you're...
Well, the property behind there is actually city-owned open space. So it's dedicated open space. Passive.
Passive open space,
obviously.
Right. Yeah.
To the right part.
I don't know that there's any plan for that at the moment.
Well, that's good.
At the city, but it is dedicated open space.
Okay.
And then up the hill, kind of beyond where the mowing stops there,
right.
that becomes private property in the county of Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
As far as the cabinet color goes, since the surrounding landscape is always changing through the year, you're going to have trouble coming up with an ideal color. The tan dun color seems appropriate. It's never been tried. I've always wondered if one couldn't shrink wrap these things like buses and cars are done with, say, the image of the agave, and it would really sort of camouflage
they are
the whole
painted
thing.
In the community I live, they have the high school art students come out and paint them, and they've been, there's some of them have been
same
requested with specific
those,
payments, some of them were just artwork.
Yeah.
Those actually, I think, draw more attention to them. Here, I think you want them to disappear.
Yeah,
I would agree with that. A tan, you know, given that that's the color behind it most of the time. So
okay.
All right.
I just had one more comment, Chair. I'd just like to say, if you could consider being generous and as much landscaping as you can provide, even to the back of it, as that is city-owned property, that hopefully the city wouldn't have any problems with trying to at least create some sense of nice vegetative relief that's there at the end of the cul-de-sac that you could actually be contributing to, that the rest of the community could appreciate.
Okay. Taken. Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
I guess my question now would be, what do we do about item E2?
Well, we'll have the clerk read it, the item, and then I'll discuss it with you.
We'll have to what?
We'll have the clerk read the item
okay.
for the record.
Got it.
Item E2 is on the sign review. It's 9 round signage located at 6831 Hollister Avenue, Suite I, case number 17057 DRB.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members. So the applicant is not able to make this meeting, last minute situation. Let me start with talking about the process. So there's a development plan for the Kmart Center. It's called the Kmart Annex. And as part of the development plan, there's some sign provisions that that require a sign, overall sign plan, and literally it's three sentences for the provisions. And it one of the sentences is to that all signs to bring back to the design review board for consideration. Now, this signage does meet the size, and I'll let Christina talk about that. So really just bringing it to the board for kind of building colors and compatibility with the building. And if you're able to be satisfied with what's proposed, you can take action. If you feel that there's additional information you need, we'll have to continue it.
Okay. Thank you. Christina?
Yeah, so the sign will be located on the west elevation in the Kmart Annex Center. It'll say 9 round, 30 min kickbox fitness in two lines. The letter sizing and colors will be as follows. The 9 and 21.7 inches tall in gray, round 15.1 inches tall in red, and 30 min kickbox fitness and 6.2 inches in black. The text stating 9 round will be internally lit with channel letters, and the text below with an internally lit white sign box. The proposed sign is approximately 8 feet long and 23 inches high with a total of 15.3 square feet. And, yeah, so currently it does meet the Kmart Annex OSP sign requirements for being a maximum of 2 feet tall and 8 feet long. But initially the tenant was kind of concerned that the existing tenants have larger signs. But three of the signs that were done under the city's jurisdiction did meet the 2x8 feet condition. Two of them aren't in business anymore. That's Metro PCS and Check Into Cash. Goleta's Smoke Shop was seen before DRB and was in between the 2x8 feet condition. But after talking to the applicant and going over the OSP, we just really recommended that they follow the OSP and reduce their sign size.
Which, if I understand correctly, as shown here.
As yeah, shown it. Here.
Meets the requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. So. Questions, anybody? Who's going to answer? You're going to answer. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I did have a question. The applicant had referred to the other signs that were larger than the overall sign plan would call for. Those larger signs, are those now grandfathered, or if a new person were to come in, a new business, would we be able to retain the original intent of the overall sign plan? Or once it's out of the barn, is that it, and that's grandfathered in and as that size for whoever takes that spot on?
I can answer that. So one of the larger signs business goes away, we would be needing to conform to the code today.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I had a question for staff. Is there any way of knowing what the other depths of the signs are, the existing ones? I only ask because this one seems unusually deep at 5 inches.
You know, typically we do see 5 feet depth or 4 feet, but I have two.
Inches. You mean inches?
Oh, sorry, inches. I do have the other two signs that were approved. Goleta Smoke Shop, let's see, was 4 feet, 4 inches side returns, and Metro PCS. Metro PCS was 5 inches also.
Thank you for being so well prepared.
Comments, anybody?
Well, I think the sign as proposed is perfectly fine. I might recommend that it be 4 inches deep. It just seems a little overly deep, but that's purely personal.
Yeah, 4 would be fine, but 5 is not a deal killer.
Okay.
I guess my only comment is I appreciate our staff working with the applicant, and I understand applicants wanted to get signs as large, if not larger, than everybody else in the neighborhood.
But I think overall sign plans are kind of important. There's a reason that we do have overall sign plans, and that to start to deviate from them could be a mistake, because it really changes expectations, and all of a sudden, incrementally, you've changed the look of an entire shopping complex. So I'm good with this as proposed. If the applicant would accept something that's less deep in terms of the letters, that would be a good outcome.
Can we have that be the motion?
We can make that a motion, then. Yeah.
Can we like second that?
Okay. I'll second.
Could we have a specific, would the board ask for 4 inches depth?
Sure. I'll make a motion that the sign be approved as proposed, with the condition that it be 4 inches deep versus the 5 that's proposed.
And I'll second that.
Okay. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Great.
We have been doing for slides.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll hope that this is a path of least resistance that works for them.
We appreciate them working with staff and having a sign that. That's it. That's all we have today, right? All right. Any announcements by members? Okay. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Which one will the fountain bless? 3 hearts in the fountain. It's in the fountain.